listening to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 313 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my good pal Sean Orford. You right, Sean?
I'm stunning. This is your day today.
Well, yeah, we did a day in the life of a psychotherapist last week, and I haven't really got a title, but Sean texted me to say, we should do you this week. So a day in the life of a frantic...
Of a lunatic.
Hands-on dad, yeah. Self-employed, freelance designer,
yeah,
entrepreneur type cyclist. So hopefully there'll be some little tidbits of information you can glean from my chaotic life. You might even learn a bit more about me, and we'll come to that. How you been? What's going on?
I'm good, just crazy busy, mad man.
I had a week away last week in Northumberland, so I really unplugged from emails and not quite the world, because I'm still online now with good old 4G, which I find tricky to disable.
And you know that 5G is coming around the corner.
Yeah, oh, I do. It's just faster speeds, right? It's just mega fast download and upload.
Is this where we all go, Huawei, whatever they're called, are taking over the world?
Yeah, apparently. I should read up more on it. I think it's going to basically mean, like, live streaming and video chat will be, there'll be no more kind of,
that'd be good.
You know.
Especially if that was between here and the Middle East, because when I'm online, I get a lot of,
To everyone, or to...
It depends.
Just when we're trying to record.
Yeah.
So I was away in Northumberland, in a real chill out spot, nice and quiet, peaceful, walking on beaches, found a few new beaches. It's amazing. My mates take the mickey out of me for going to the same place all the time, like 2-3 times a year. I was thinking about it, it is a bit silly in some ways. Not silly, but I can see why they're taking the mickey. But at the same time, we get to know that place like so well, and even I've been going there 36 years, and we're still finding new spots and even a new beach, like last week, and these new little walking routes, and just getting to know the place better. So, something to be said, isn't there, for really getting to know somewhere really well, rather than just trying new places all the time and just scatterbrain.
I've done all that running around trying different places, and I don't know whether that's a function of age or just the idea of being able to feel comfortable about who you are, where you are.
Yeah.
But there are places I like to go back to, and part of it is because I know them, but part of it is because I like them.
Mm.
You know.
So that's what I always do. But life, were you... What were you up to last week? Anything you went?
Oh, we've
got no half term to worry about, or
anything? No. But it's this time of year. It's like family birthdays; they roll in one after another. So there's like a continual stream of meals to eat, places to go, things to do, and that kind of stuff. So it gets a bit kind of busy, and I get to that point of craving. I just like a day where you don't do anything, The issue in our society is it can be 24/7, especially if people are using media. It's like it never stops; it rolls on.
Yep.
You know. So, but I'm moving ahead. I'm sorting out my retirement from the NHS, which will allow me to get on and do other things. That leaves up some space in my life.
That'll be a big deal for you, right?
Yeah, I'll be down to just working 40 hours a week instead of the regular 16.
I wonder if you'll be like, when you get off that merry-go-round, whether you'll be like Bilbo Baggins when he gave up the ring and he started to age really quickly.
It's funny, I was doing a thing yesterday in Preston with the U3A. And there are a cracking bunch. It's the thing about average age is 80, youngs are in their 70s, the olders are in their 90s. And they're amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're into that lifelong learning, and they are so young because of that.
Yeah.
You know?
How did you get on board with the University of the Third Age?
One day someone said to me, would you come and give us a talk? And I did. I gave them one talk, and then it's rolled from one to another. Could you come and do this? Could you come and do that? So yesterday... I was impressed, and then someone said, oh, could you come do some stuff in McGull? So it was that kind of stuff. it kind of rolls from one to another, really.
Cool.
Yeah. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website if you've made it this far and you want to learn more about what we do, and all previous episodes of the show are available there as well. And I don't know, are you going to write a blog post about this?
I am. Yeah, I'm going to tell the truth.
The truth about Ed. Than I can imagine. Cool. So, and you do sign up for our mailing list for podcast alerts and free meditation files and a discount code for the book, Live in the Present. Right. So, rather than just me talking about what I do every day, well, maybe we should try and put me in the position where I'm on the sofa or on the couch in your consulting room, and you're
yes.
And you're just meeting
and
me.
And what
for the
happened
first
to
time.
You when you were a child?
Yeah, you just meet me for the first time. Or,
No. I think what we should do is you should pick a day like yesterday. Let's just do yesterday.
Well, I was just thinking yesterday was a good day.
Okay, so come on. Take me through your day. What happened to you? You woke up.
Well, yeah, I did.
Or did something wake you up?
I know you have a 4-till-10 day, or when we didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
It wasn't quite that. Yeah, I was awoken yesterday morning. My wife gets up before me. She's getting ready for. She's a teacher, so getting ready for school and having a bit of quiet time. The lads are still snoozing. I think the first thing I recall was actually probably my wife almost getting ready to leave the house, so saying goodbye. And on a Tuesday, this is where my interesting day got really interesting. We have milk deliveries, good old-fashioned glass milk bottles, and my lads have taken it upon themselves nicely to. Take the milk bottles in, so when Bethan goes out in the morning on a Tuesday, they'll see the milk bottles and they'll go, oh, we'll take them in. And it'd been raining overnight a lot yesterday, so they were a little bit slippy. Anyway, I heard them going back and forth, clicking, there's 4 milk bottles, and I heard, like, no noise, that's good. And then I heard a smash. And then, but I don't recall it sounding like a smash, I heard a noise, and I was like, was that a smash? Anyway, next thing, I hear these little coming upstairs, and Jacob comes in to the bedroom where I'm just kind of getting up and about. Daddy, something's happened in the kitchen, and he was looking a bit teary, and I knew what he'd done, but he's trying to help out, you know, and it was an accident.
Yeah.
So I was like, don't worry, I'll come and sort it out. So my first job yesterday at 7:15 was to clear a pint of milk from the kitchen floor and a load of broken glass all over, which was good fun.
Mm.
So got that done. Got 2 little
boys. So who dropped it?
It was Jacob.
It was Jacob.
Youngest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bless him. So that was good fun. And then, yeah, got the boys dressed, got them breakfast. Bit of telly for them. Got myself ready, got the bags ready. I got my bags ready, got the bike ready. And got ready to go to school. 8:30 this is by now, so it's a relatively quiet little morning.
Mm-hmm.
Chilled out. Cycling to school with Jacob on the seat behind me, William tootling on ahead. And then get a rear puncture. And I'd blown it up the night before, and I think I'd overpressurized it a little bit, but then I fixed it last night and I've got another puncture today. So I kind of walked the bike to school.
Have you got something stuck in your tire?
Well, I changed in such a rush this morning that I think I forgot to check.
You could have like a thorn or
something sticking inside the tire.
Yeah.
It was such a dramatic it must be something quite big actually.
Mm.
So I walked the rest of the way to school. I had a meeting in Liverpool in Wavertree, and I was going to ride there. So I was like, oh, what do I do? But we have a spare bike, my wife's bike. So after I dropped the boys in school and give them a kiss, say goodbye, walked back home, got my wife's bike, rode back to the station, hopped on the train to Liverpool, got off at James Street, cycled up the hill to Wavertree, which is a nice, well, it's not particularly pleasant.
Is a bike pink?
No, it's not.
Shame.
Yeah, it has got this kind of got the lady's frame, you know, so it's like a step through. But it's actually a bit more comfortable than my bike, so I quite like to ride it every now and again.
Yeah.
Bit of a treat. So I had a meeting at 10 o'clock in Wavertree with a client of mine, Hyperion Executive Search. They do renewable energy recruitment stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an electric cars, that kind of stuff. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very cool company, good bunch of guys. So I had a good hour and a half chat with them about what they want to do for social media stuff and the bits and bobs that I can help them with. That was very good. I'll stick a link into their website. They've got a really good podcast as well, actually, which I helped set up for them, called This Week in Clean Tech, which is where David, the chief exec or CEO, managing director, not sure what title he likes to give himself, interviews high-powered people and interesting guys working in that field. So that was cool. Meeting done about midday. Bombed back into Liverpool, hop on the train, and decided to work from home because I think I needed to be back for a food delivery at home by like 4 o'clock anyway, so I thought I'll just go out. So work from home in the afternoon. It's all a bit frantic, really. Are you gleaning any bits of information so far about my crazy life?
It's sounding pretty crazy, isn't it?
all the while, of course, I'm checking. I've got messages coming on my phone.
So when you're working from home, what are you doing?
My setup from home is, which I don't work from home very often now, like maybe once every few weeks, is not particularly healthy. It's sitting on the sofa with my laptop going on, and I usually have the news on. I think I got back just in time for like the end of Daily Politics. I like to have a bit of that on, a bit of chit chat, get me angry about what's going on in the world. Trump's over at the moment.
Trump, yeah.
So there's plenty of talk about that. Although, I don't know, people don't seem to be that bothered, to be honest. I think they've given up not caring about how much of an arse he is. Oh,
sorry.
It's all right, mate. Do you need to be in here?
Yeah, no, I just
want
a quick look. I just wanted to see what
fans she was in. It's all right, we're just doing a quick podcast. You're right, but it's okay. Cheers. It's all right.
Is that part of the day in the life?
That's part of the day in the life of working in a building like this. So I didn't have any of that yesterday.
But when you're at home and you're working at home, you say like you got the TV on, are you more productive or less productive? Would you?
I worked from home for 5 years, so I think I'm probably, if anything, maybe a little bit more productive. Because in here, as we've just seen there, people knocking on the door and there's people in the office, it's quite a social place to work.
It's a really interesting hub, this, isn't it? I mean, how long have you been in here?
About 2.5 years here at Pacific Road.
And how did you find that?
Loved it. I mean, I moved in with Mike.
No, I mean, how did you find it?
Oh, how did I find out about the place?
Yeah, how did you?
Well, I was hunting around because I needed to get out of the house because Bethan was on the
turn. You had a place in Liverpool before, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, for about a year. I had an office there, which was pretty cool. Not a trek, but just a bit of a faff getting across there. And I needed someone in the world that was relatively close so I could do the school run and then bob down somewhere and get some work done and then get back home.
Yeah.
And this is a 20-minute ride away.
Yeah.
And it's quite a hip, happening, buzzing place.
Yeah, there's always stuff going on here. I'm amazed. It is a real kind of a hub. You can feel the vibe sometimes.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a perfect spot. But yeah, when I'm working from home, I don't know if I'm more or less productive. I'm probably just as productive, but I probably do a bit more chit-chatting when I'm in here.
When you're in your office, you share it with three other guys, don't you? So is that distracting, or does that encourage you to do more?
I guess you could say it's distracting, but how do you define work and how do you define busyness? You know, for me, as a self-employed like designer, and it's the chat and the meeting people is the work, because that's how I get work, you know, by being friendly and helping people out. And in a lot of ways, the work I do, the easy bit is that tiny bit in the end where I actually like build a website for someone. It's like that few hours where I'll actually bash out the leaflet or the website. The hard work or the fun bit is that 90% of the time I spend meeting people and, you know, helping them out and finding out what they need.
Yeah,
it's pretty cool.
So if we were looking at a day in your life, I know we picked yesterday, but you have other interests as well, don't you?
Well,
so we know about your bike interests, or we think we know about them. Explain to us what are your bike interests.
Yeah, okay, so we need more people on bikes for loads of reasons. Congestion, for public health, air quality, this thing called climate change, which is going to eat us up, spit us out in the next 20 years.
And Trump, whilst you were talking just then, Trump came up on the news feed saying that climate change isn't real, it's just like a variation in the weather.
Yeah.
It's neither here nor there.
Well, show me your data, Mr. Trump. Yeah, show me your data. You might as well believe that the Earth is flat now if you believe that stuff. We've got to crack on. But yeah, I'm really interested in the psychology about why people don't choose to ride a bike when it's often just as quick. Or it's, you know, it's a lot cheaper. You know, the main reason I did it initially was because I didn't want to buy a second car and have to have the expense of whatever that would be annually. So, you know, I didn't get into riding again for environmental reasons. But we do have these massive environmental obligations coming up or right now on our shoulders. And part of that is getting people out of cars and bicycles. And also,
when I was a kid, it was either a bus, a bike, or you walked. And there weren't that many. I mean, not every family had a car. Now families have got two, three, four cars, haven't they?
Yeah. We've got three people in your house, haven't you? And three cars in the driveway. That's just not what we've done. And, you know, that's the habit that I was in for a long time. And I've got really interested in, as the more I kind of researched it, not just cycling, but walking and public transport and, like, car dependency. It's really fascinating about, like, how cars have kind of broken down communities in some ways because we're so, like I've said before, we're so used to kind of getting out of our front door, and in the same way we'll put our coat on, we'll get in the car. You know, it's just a habit to get out of your house, on your car, and go anywhere. It might be a few miles, it might be 10 miles, it might be a couple hundred metres to the local shop. It's just what you do. And that's really damaging for communities because people don't know their neighbours as well anymore.
Yeah.
All the public space, you know, I see a road as a public space where kids could be playing football or, you know, drawing on the road and the street and playing hopscotch. Kids don't do that anymore because it's not safe, and they've been kind of ushered back into their homes because it's not safe to go outside. You might get splatted by someone in their 4x4. So yeah, trying to figure all that out as well.
So that takes you to do work with, I know that you're involved with the police and the council.
Yeah.
So what are you actually doing with that? What are your projects?
Well, I'm on a couple of like steering groups just as someone that's interested to help advise on policy for transport. And on the environmental steering group at the council, the Active Travel Forum, they're things I just got involved with. I need to figure out a way to earn a living off this stuff because I can see a huge demand for having to redesign streets and how we get around. So I've set up a company called Rethink Now, which is a community interest company. So it's, you can apply for funding. So it's like a charity stroke company where you're, you can apply for grant funding.
Yeah,
and the projects we're hoping to do are kind of focused on sustainable travel and air quality. So we started a project at the school where my lad goes, where we were doing air quality testing around the school, walking in various routes to school with kids to test what the air quality is like along their routes, how it deteriorates on the way, and that was really interesting. So hopefully getting some press about that in a few weeks, actually. And we want to roll that scheme out to a lot more schools on the world. So we're currently putting together a very... This was part of my day yesterday. So after I'd done my work, I'd picked Will up from school. I'd done tea at 4:30, 5:00. And then we'd done the whole bedtime routine, letting the boys have a bit of chill out and then read a book and then get them to sleep. And then 8:00, met with a pal, Ewan, who is part of Rethink Now. He's kind of one of the directors we've got signed up. He's a really experienced public health bod.
Yeah.
And met with him at a pub last night, the Red Fox, Thornton Hough. Cracking pub. Just for a catch up about loads of things, really. We like to meet up every couple of months for a drink and it was orange and lemonade, I should say. chat about the world and also about Rethink and about how it's progressing and if he can help and his advice and stuff. We had a good chat for a couple of hours, and then I got back home about 10:00 and I needed to redraft this funding application because I'm meeting at 1:00 at the council because we need their support for this which is quite a hefty amount of funding we're applying for to redesign the area around where I live to make it low traffic and make it a bit more hospitable, a bit cleaner, healthier, safer.
So you're saying that I work late because I work till 10:00. So what time did you finish?
Well, last night I worked till about 12:30, which is quite unusual these days. I'm quite good at the moment for getting done by about 10:30.
Right.
Last night.
So you're as bad as I am.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite unusual, really. But I needed to redraft this application by this morning so I can send it off, so that they can see it before we meet them at 1 o'clock.
So answer this question then. You said you went to the pub and you drank orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If someone drinks alcohol and then rides a bike.
Oh yeah.
Can you be done under the law for being drunk in charge of a bike?
Technically, you can. I've only read a little bit about this. Technically, you can, but it's very rare. Like, you won't get breathalyzed as a cyclist, I don't think, because you technically, you know, if you cause an incident or a crash, yeah, you're in big trouble. But generally, I think if someone's riding and they're obviously drunk, which I ride after a few drinks every now and again. It's quite interesting.
I wonder how many people think, I'll take the bike to the pub because it doesn't matter.
Mm.
And I wonder whether legally you are actually...
I think legally you're not, to be honest. I think you can be done.
I know that on a horse you can be done for being drunk in charge of a horse.
On a horse?
Yeah, you can.
Do people do that?
Yeah, wow. I assume. I don't think the horse has to be drunk.
Just yeah.
Yeah,
I think generally, technically you can. Generally, it's kind of you'll just be told to get on your way,
push your bike,
push the right. Rest of the way, mate. Yeah, yeah. But not something I advise.
Interesting.
Yeah, but I drove to the pub last night. Shame on me. But I was on the orange juice.
Yeah,
and limos.
Yeah.
So it was a late night last night. Quite unusually. I don't. I've been quite good in the last year or so, really, because I used to work really late a lot. But I kind of knocked that on the head because I was just really getting low on sleep and getting 5 or 6 hours a night. And I can get by on that, but I don't know. It's not the way my system is set up for. Because I know you don't get much sleep at all, but you seem to be.
Yeah.
Does it have a negative impact on you? Would you like to get more sleep?
Yeah, but if I meditate, and I'm doing quite a bit of meditation during the day, that kind of takes up the slack.
Yeah.
So it's quite different. I think that it's nice to have, for me, like 7 hours. That would be a good night for me. But quite often I'm grabbing 5 or something like that.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, last night, it was probably about half one, when I finally switched the light off and got my head down.
Mm.
And I woke up again this morning, I think it was 7. So what's that, 6.5 hours.
Mm.
I feel all right, but I feel like I probably could have done with a bit more. And I do usually get more sleep than that these days.
So when you go away on holiday, do you sleep more then?
So last week when we were in Northumberland, I mean, it takes a couple of days to readjust and kind of get into the new swing, but yeah, we slept loads, all of us actually.
Mm.
You know, going to bed at like 10, half 10, and waking at 8, 9 o'clock. So, and last week we kind of got in this routine where we'd come back to the caravan at about 3 or 4 in the afternoon after a day of walking or just trot along the beach or whatever, and we'd kind of read for a bit, and the boys would be out in the field mucking around with all the toys that are in the shed, and me and Bethany just fall asleep on the sofa.
Have a siesta.
So clearly we need those holidays to kind of do a bit of a reset.
Yeah.
But yeah, life's pretty crazy for me really at the moment, and it's probably going to get more crazy as rethink, hopefully, gets a bit of traction and a bit of money,
yeah,
a bit of funding to do some projects.
And is that where you'd like to move towards?
Yes, it would. I mean, I think about this stuff all the time. I feel like I've finally found something that at the age of 37 where I'm like properly into it.
It floats your boat.
And it's mad, you know. I've been doing this show and the design stuff for a long time, and we talk about it, don't we, a lot, about finding your thing.
Yeah.
And it's weird because I've only just found it, I feel like, I'm 37, it's like how many people...
I was into my 30s really before I decided what I really wanted to
do. Yeah, do you think that's... I feel like I'm at the right time for this because like, I'm at an age where... Because I'm meeting with politicians and like officers and stuff, and they're listening to me, and like I don't know if they would have if I was some fresh-faced kid out of college or whatever.
Yeah. So could you imagine becoming a politician yourself?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I've been sounded out for like local council and stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, at some point. Not yet. I'm too embedded in this rethink stuff, really.
Mm.
I don't know.
Do you feel that from a council point of view, a more political point of view, you could have more of an impact?
I think from having met councillors and even our own MP, you know, and they do good work. And I think, you know, in some ways, a politician is kind of led by public thought and feelings in some ways. One of the reasons I've set up Rethink, and it's a community company, is because I realised that it's no point, even if I was an MP or a Prime Minister, I wouldn't be able to get all this stuff done on cycling because there isn't that public appetite for it. You know, if what we need to start spending massively on it, and we need to start making driving a lot more expensive, and that's just not popular at all. Like, so the way I'm trying to do it is from the bottom up rather than top down. So we're trying to build this kind of layer of public support for investment.
So I can't see that many people are going to be very happy about the idea that it gets more expensive.
No, it's not, but it's what we've got to do, man. I mean, it's the amount of money we spend on infrastructure for driving, for cars, for picking up the bill of all the crashes. Like the cost we pay, my tax on our car, the vehicle tax is £30 a year for a diesel, you know, quite a big, chunky diesel. That's just nowhere near enough. And like the fuel duty, if you add up what you spend, what we pay for to the privilege of driving, doesn't get anywhere close to paying for the externalities of crashes, air quality, the public health side of things. Mm-hmm. So it's going to take some brave people to stand up and say this ain't right. And you know, driving is seen as a kind of a freedom for a lot of people, and I can see why. But yeah, it's in some ways it kind of. It's the exact opposite, I think. It kind of hamstrings communities. It's kind of, I've started to see it as really the root cause of a lot of problems that we've got.
And at a psychological and social level as well.
Yeah, fascinated by all that stuff. Yeah, because there's a scheme in Waltham Forest in London, it's called Mini Holland, where they've kind of redesigned the whole town to make it much harder to get around by car. So bollards in roads like yours, so it basically stops through traffic. All the data that's come in the last couple of years since it's been initially done is really positive. People are more walking and cycling more, they feel healthier, the air quality's improved. They've actually calculated that every kid born has 7 months more life expectancy because of the changes made. People are out in the streets more, you know, meeting with neighbours.
Be good if you could put a link up for that.
I will. And even the business side, which a lot of businesses kicked off at first, saying, "Oh, you stop cars coming down here. We won't have any traffic. We'll have no trade." Thankfully, they got some.
Were they all EastEnders then?
Well, it was in London, so I'm assuming they were talking. But retail went up, man. Spending went up because people that are walking and cycling, and it was just a healthier place to be, the high street. And people wanted to spend time there rather than just bombing through on the way back from work and nipping out and getting some bread. It's a place they went after work to chill out and stop and meet their friends.
Interesting.
So, yeah, we've got to do this stuff, man.
Yeah. Be interesting to be able to drop back in 50 years and see, you know, what's happened.
I know, man. We'll see where it is. But So that's taken up a lot of my thought and a lot of my time at the moment. And so, yeah, I was working from 8 o'clock yesterday morning through till midnight. So not quite your 4 to 10.
Not far off, though.
And it's quite unusual, at the moment. It's a bit hectic at the moment, but generally I'm quite chilled out. And I do take time out every 6 weeks. I'm lucky that because my wife's a teacher, we get these nice little blocks of time where I work. Where we all work hard as a family, and then we get 1 or 2 weeks off. And we really kind of value that time.
Yeah.
And switch off.
Yeah. So what kind of resource would you put down for this week? That's a good one, isn't it?
My resource I was going to mention was a book I read when I was away called The Boys in the Boat. And it's an amazing story about this rower from 1930s America. He's called Joe Rantz. Really kind of working class, poor chap who... at university in Washington State, in Seattle, got into rowing, and he was quite a strong, strapping lad, and he was always working with his hands, and he got into rowing, and it tells this story of his journey kind of through what is quite an upper-class privileged sport, and how he had to work through college and work through the system to become this world-class rower. And he ended up going to the Olympics in Germany in 1936 under the banner of the Nazi Germany and all that. And just this incredible story about the technical side of rowing is really interesting, because it's obviously massively, like, physically a tough sport, but technically as well. Like, it doesn't matter if you're the strongest guy in the world, if you can't get your oar in the exact same spot every time, and all the seven other people in the boat with you are doing it in synchronicity, then you're shot. So it just taught me loads about...
Well, I used to row eights when I was a kid.
Did you?
At school, yeah. I was bell. I was at the top end. You have to have a good cox, the guy that's kind of shouting commands. And you have to feather your oars so that as you pull with the blade down, and then to bring it back, you have to turn it and feather it. Yeah, and if you don't, it's called catching a crab.
I learned loads of this stuff. It's fascinating.
Right. Well, I can remember on the River Thames, a place called Barn Elms, we used to, because at the school we used to race those. And
this wasn't in 1930s, so you're not in the story.
1820. So I'm at the front pulling, and I didn't feather my oar properly, and I caught a crab, which meant that the blade got taken by the current, and it actually littered me out of the boat and threw me in the river. Tossed me out of the boat.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, mate, no. I mean, my dad was a rower at university. Manchester, so he did, and I think he rode on the Newcastle quite a bit. So I've always liked watching the Olympics as a sport, but oh man, it gave me such a respect for really interesting stuff, and the technical side and the emotional side of it, in the backdrop of like Depression era America and then Nazi Germany. It's an incredible book. So that's what I need to do with Rethink, really. We all need to be pulling in the same direction at the same time.
And don't catch a crab while you're doing it.
No, don't catch a crab or you'll fall in. Or you get a puncture. So that's my resource. Have you got anything you've been reading or watching?
One of the things I think that would be good to put up would be the 4-hour work week.
Oh, blimey, yeah.
Because what that does is it makes you examine what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it does question you about... because you're questioning work style, you're questioning lifestyle, you're doing the whole thing.
Yep.
So I think that would be a good one.
4-hour work week.
If you could stick on that when you
do it. It's been a while since we mentioned that one.
Yeah, but it's a good book, isn't it?
It is. It's good. It's quite... I mean, it does talk about some technical stuff, which is of its time, really, because it's probably 10 years old, that book. But there are a lot of theories that Tim wrote in that book that are will hold true forever, I reckon.
Yeah. So... I'd like to check that one then.
Good
so.
Shout. All right, cool. Liveinthepresent.co.uk. Send us an email or a suggestion about the stuff you would like us to talk about in the future, in upcoming shows. And we're back next week, aren't we?
We are indeed.
Cool. Thanks, Sean.
You take care.
See you later.
Bye.